Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today, I'm super, super excited for my extra special guest, Kate Cook. Kate is an amazing artist. She goes by V8 Kate, who she does like all kinds of wild stuff. I'll let her kind of get into what she does, but I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Kate, how are you?
Hey, I'm well. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Oh, for sure.
So I found you from a painting you have online. Well, it's not online. It's probably in real life too, but I found it online called, Dime Store Cowgirl.
Yes.
And that, can you just describe that for everybody listening?
Oh, for sure. So my studio's name is Asphalt Canvas Custom Art. And the painting you're talking about is one that I just released, at the beginning of this new year. And it's actual pinup cowgirl that I painted on an antique window that my parents actually took out of their house when they were doing like some upgrades when they moved to Texas. And it already had like a frost on the back of it, and it had this really cool window frame. It's like a dormer window. And so I carried it around for a couple months, and I just had seen this vintage photograph of the real life pinup girl, Jane Russell. And she was in a Western movie called The Pale Face. And they had like some behind the scenes candid photos that I think I was on Pinterest or something. And I just happened to pin one of those photos because I was like, wow, that is such a pretty photo. And I had this idea of a dime store cowgirl based off of some lyrics from a Kacey Musgraves song. And so I was like, this is going to be super cool. So I honestly did this piece out of like, I don't want to say boredom, but with COVID at the beginning of the year, I was pretty slow because of the work that was lost by my clients that were supposed to hire me, and then they ended up losing their jobs or whatever the case was. So I had some downtime, and I was like, I'm going to paint this cowgirl. I've been thinking about this forever. I wanted to try my luck at, like, hand painting, like, embroidery, because I love, like, old Western wear. And so that's kind of what all came together. And so it has like silver leafing and lettering called Dime Store. And it says like Dime Store and then Cowgirls all hand painted and enamels as well.
Yeah, it came out really stunning.
Thank you.
Is it normal for you to like bring together kind of like your like different influences like that? So it sounds like you had influences from this pinup and then from the song and then like your parents gave you this. Window that was like just a pure act of accidental awesomeness, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of my inspiration, I should say, comes from music. I love music and lyrics, and you're going to have a really hard time finding a song that I don't like, that I'm not open to listen to, because I find a lot of inspiration, like going to live music concerts and just listening in general. But yeah, I think the best art that I've created always comes from multiple sources as far as where my inspiration came. So like whether it be a photo or something I wrote down in my sketchbook for a long time ago, or I've been really like working a lot on like words that inspire me lately. So I have a painting I'm working on right now from another songwriter named Dame Williams, and it's like these two snakes that are like kind of in battle, if you will, behind a bunch of cacti, and then there's gonna be like a sunset and like some cool desert scene in the background. It's gonna be really cool, and it's on this like candied teal metal panel. And of course, you know, those are the projects like Dime Store Cowgirl that I work on when I have downtime, which is so rare. So eventually you'll see that painting, but I can't wait to like finish that one as well, because it's in my mind, it's so cool, you know. I can't wait to get it on in paint.
Well, it must be nice to be an artist that has like no downtime, you know, because I feel like there's that stereotype of like the starving artist.
Oh yes, gosh, you couldn't have said it better. Like I think my like life's work is basically like crushing that thought of a starving artist. I feel like for a long time, like I knew for a long time since I've been in high school that being an artist is what I wanted to do for a living, and it never really looked at it as far as like full-time professional artist with my own studio and doing my own work. I always just thought, okay, well, there's got to be a job out there that has some sort of creative outlet for me. So I tried like teaching at Painting with a Twist, and I tried teaching at a local little art school here in my town. And But yeah, like even with those jobs, like I never felt like, oh, I'm a starving artist. I've never felt like that because I guess it's more of a mindset thing than it is. Like I'm just very driven, and that idea of a starving artist has always like kind of pissed me off almost. So I
well,
think
good.
That,
I'm really glad I brought it up then. Awesome.
Yeah, totally. I think like, man, I just think that it kind of almost fueled me. Barbie, I don't know. Do you know Barbie the welder? Have you ever seen her work? Yeah, so she has this thing, and she's working on a book right now, and I'm not going to say the real words, but she has a book coming out called Effort Fuel, and it's basically, like, all those people that were like, oh, you're just going to be a starving artist that fueled her fire to, like, be this awesome, like, entrepreneur and artist. And so I feel the same way. Like, I vividly remember in a painting with a twist class that I had, which is one of those, like, come drink wine and learn how to paint this, like, kind of half-ass tree with a heart in it or whatever the case is. Like, I know a lot of people have fun with those, and I enjoyed teaching people in those classes, but I vividly remember a guy coming up to me after the class, and it was in a big group of people, and he was wearing a Santa hat, and I'll never forget this because it was during the holidays, and he said, gosh, how much do you make here? And I was like really like put off initially, and then I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm getting through college with this, and or whatever I said back, and he was like, man, I just think working at McDonald's would be so much easier. Why don't you just do that? And I don't know what, it's just like, I'll never forget that. It pissed me off, honestly. And then from then on, I was like, man, he's just fueling the fire.
That's awesome. I know that, I forgot what I was going to say completely. It just literally, it was there and then it just completely disappeared.
It's late.
So you always wanted to be an artist?
Oh, yes, totally. Like, so in high school and before that, I actually had always wanted to be either an artist or a ballet dancer, which is really weird because I know, like, the people that know me now and follow my work now have, like, no correlation with, like, oh, she used to be a ballerina. But I danced ballet with a company for, like, 15 years. And I taught ballet, and that was something that I was really, really passionate about. And then I kind of had a, like, come to Jesus moment, and my parents were very helpful in, like, kind of guiding me in a career path that made sense. And no shame to any of those ballerinas out there, but their shelf life was really short, so their career was really short, therefore. And I'd always had a talent for art, and so I was always in art and drawing on vacation and things, and I excelled very, very well in, like, my middle school art class. Like, I was in the highest art class available when I was super young. So they were kind of like, hey, why don't you just try and, you know, try and focus on that path more and see where it goes there. And I really did start focusing on that, like, middle high school years. And then, of course, that's when I decided, like, okay, I want to go to school for art. It was right after my right during my junior, senior years when I decided, like, this is what I want to do for a living. And at the time, it was working for Disney, of all things, because I'm originally from California. I live in Texas now, but I'm originally from California. So Disney was a big thing for me. And I was, like, really intrigued with, like, the hand-drawn storyboards and taking that concept of like, a story and then that somebody verbally told you and then turning it into artwork. I just thought that was so fascinating and something that I could do.
It's amazing. I know, actually, like, quite a few artists that make their living making art. And the number of artists who started off wanting to work for either Disney or Marvel.
Yeah.
It's probably, like, almost every artist I've ever talked to wanted to work for either one of those companies.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's like that go-to, like, oh, these people are artists. That's what I could do for a living. You know, there's so many other forms of art out there in life, but the first one that you ask any average person, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, Disney. Like, that's what they're going to think, I think. Especially in California, because it's so, like, prominent there, you know.
And now with the internet, it's so being able to make art and sell it,
yeah,
and just the ability to make a living doing anything is so widely available.
Oh, absolutely. My husband and I were just talking about that a couple of days ago because honestly, like, especially with this year and not having, so all of my art shows that I go to, at least 4 to 5 art shows a year, big shows that I plan for, and all of them were canceled because of COVID. And those are shows where I do like networking and I stripe cars live and I, you know, sell goods, products that I, you know, hand-painted earrings, prints, things like that. So they're like big money things. And instead of doing that this year, I really like honed in on online marketing and doing like Etsy sales and like raffles and things like that. And so I started saying to my husband, I was like, man, props to the people that came before the internet that made a name for themselves, because although the internet is like saturated almost to a fault with art, it's also like been an amazing outlet for me to still make money in such a like weird crisis of a year. And I'm so grateful for it. It's a blessing and a curse, to be honest. Like I feel like it's such an overwhelming task for me anyway, to continue to like post every day online and like go on my Etsy shop and do Pinterest and Facebook and website and email. It's like so much, but I'm so lucky to have it, because this year would have been terrible without it.
I know people who make their living doing the strangest, like most niche, obscure things you can think of.
I love that.
That they're able to just make a living. Like they're never going to be millionaires, you know, but they can make, you know, a 6-figure income. You know, one guy I'm thinking of, it's my buddy's father. He sells like fly fishing lures.
Oh my gosh, that is such a great art form. That is such an amazing art form.
He did that for years and years in his house. Like when we used to go over there all the time, he would have like the table would be there and would have all the fly fishing like little ropes and feathers and stuff. And then ropes, thread, or I don't even know what it, I have.
Right. Yeah, I have no idea either. So.
But yeah, anyways, now with the internet, he's able to make like a good living just selling, doing this thing that he loves and that he never, you know, he did for himself and his buddies, and that was it. And now he's able to turn it into like an actual living with a website and an Instagram, and that's it.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, I think people too, like as a whole, I think our culture is so much more open to the small business idea and like purchasing products and goods through small business because of the difference in customer service they receive. So like I think had he or I started like a couple, maybe like 6 to 10 years ago, like the concept of buying from somebody that had just like an online presence and like maybe would show up at the farmer's market wasn't as trusted as what it is now. And I think that we have the internet and like social media to really thank for that, because the first thing I do when I need a gift, I don't go to, you know, and maybe it's because I'm, you know, in the market every day and doing it, I know what it's like, but the first thing I do when I need a gift, I don't go to Walmart. I like scroll on my Instagram and be like, oh yeah, I remember this one guy, what was his name? And I scroll through and try and find like his work or her work, you know, before I spend money somewhere else. And it's because I love supporting people that are doing the same thing my husband and I are doing for a living, you know.
Is your husband an artist also?
No, he's like extremely creative, and actually I built my business model based off the idea that everyone truly is creative. I really do truly believe that. I just think that their creativity comes out in different forms. But with that being said, like my husband and I have like hours long conversations about like dreams for my business, and like maybe I'm thinking of a painting and he can like really help me narrow down like the line work for it, and like he can visualize it, he always says, but he can't paint it. And so we make a really great team in that sense. But he's actually a grave digger and funeral director by trade, and so that's what he does.
That is unbelievable. Does he want to come on? Does he want to come on the podcast?
Yeah, oh, he would probably dig that, honestly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, a very intelligent man when it comes to that side of life, and he's really opened my eyes up to a very different type of hero, people that don't get recognized whatsoever for their, like, skills and knowledge and their trade that they've spent, like, their whole life developing, and I think it's a trade that I even had no idea existed, and I am so grateful to have the knowledge of what actually goes into that side of how our culture, like, and our world spins.
I can imagine that that's probably, like, the most unthought of, unappreciated job there
really is.
I'm sure you don't get to see, you know, it actually must be kind of depressing because you must not get to see a lot of, like, happy people, you know?
Well, yeah, I think it is, but honestly, when we were dating, like, I asked him actually a very similar question, and he was very, like, candid with his answer and basically said, like, although it is depressing, like, there's so many more times where the family that you are helping or whatever the scenario is comes back and thanks you for helping them through that, like, time, and for the most part, those people are experiencing, like, the saddest, most traumatic time they'll ever experience in their life. And so he's there to be able to help them through that. And he says that's extremely rewarding.
That's super red.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting. Sorry.
Moment
of
silence.
So your studio, how long has your studio actually been?
So I've been open full time as Asphalt Canvas Custom Art LLC for going on 4 years next month. And then prior to that, I was still Asphalt Canvas Custom, but I was doing it as kind of a side gig hobby type thing. I wouldn't say hobby because honestly, I was making good money at this for quite a while. I was always having, like, you know, one or two other jobs and then going to school full-time or whatever the case is. I didn't put all of my energy and focus into this until actually I met my husband. And so, yeah, about 4 years, going on 4 years anyway, full-time.
What was the turning point that made you decide, like, this is, I can do this full-time?
Going back to my husband, actually, my family has always been really supportive of my artwork and me doing this as a career eventually one day. That was always, I know, my parents' dream for me. But I never felt fully, like, financially stable doing, I was always so scared of just, like, making that plunge, you know? And I've listened to a lot of the people we've had on the podcast, and I know it's a very, like, generic answer because we all have the same thing. Like, oh my gosh, like, we never wanted to actually make that final jump into full-time entrepreneurship because it's so financially scary. But when I met my husband, he was, like, very supportive, but he was really encouraging, and he was the last person to give me that final, like, nudge off the ledge, like, just do it. Like, just do it and see what happens, and guess what? Like, if it doesn't work, like, it's okay. Like, you can go back and get a job somewhere or whatever the case is. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't work, and that mindset really helped me, like, jump off into the deep end, if you will, and and do this full time. And honestly, like, there have been days where even in my third year of business, I've thought, like, was this the right idea? Like, was this a good idea? Because it has been tough. Like, it has been very tough. It's been the hardest job I've ever had. And I've had some very stressful, hard jobs in my life. But the difference is that it's worth so much more to me to keep going, you know?
What was kind of the hardest thing from being an artist to, like, making that a business? Like, I feel like art is one of those things that everybody feels like you should just do it for free.
That's such a great question. The hardest part is totally, when you said, like, do it for free or whatever, my mindset is very, like, giving oriented. Like, I that's a huge pillar of my business, is giving back to my community. And so that mindset of, like, oh, I just want to give my art away has actually heavily hindered my business in a sense of, like, my pricing and how I work my pricing. So that has truly been my biggest challenge with owning a business in art, besides not having any, I got, like, a passing D in math school and math class, and I took, like, the dumb kid math class in college just to, like, get through. And so, like, doing taxes and stuff hasn't been fun either, and that has been totally self-taught. But outside of that silliness, like, honestly, like, getting my prices so that my customer sees value and worth, and then I also feel comfortable with asking those prices, has been the most challenging part. And it's something that I listen to a lot of podcasts on, a lot of blog reading that I've done, and just a lot of, like, you know, at just self-reflecting, really, like, what do I think my work is worth, and what is my customer going to be willing to pay for that so that I can make a living at this? Like, I can charge whatever the heck I want, but how am I going to do this so that I can support my family on my passion and doing this? Because I know this is what I'm meant to do. So that has been a huge challenge for me.
I think, like you just said, I think a lot of artists have that problem where they almost have the mentality like, well, I want to do this anyway. So,
yeah,
like, I might as well just do it and you can have it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've met so many artists like that, but that's not how you make a, that's not how you build a business, in my opinion. Like, I think it's part of it, and it should definitely be part of any business, should be giving back to your customers, whether it be like I do a lot of charity artwork for auctions, and I, a lot of the shows I attend, the half of the proceeds go towards like a charity. So those are the types of things I see a lot of value in for myself, so that I can feel good about saying like, hey, this is what my artwork is worth and this is what I'm charging. Not to say like, and that's not to say that I went in like guns blazing, like $1,000 for a 5x7, you know, but I think it throughout the year, every single year I do a reevaluation of how I am going to offer my work to my customers. And I have a lot of customers that have stayed with me through those years. And so they are just the greatest. And so they've seen me through the ups and the downs and all the crazy awesome of owning a business, and especially being an artist.
And the other part of that too is, you're never going to be able to become like the best artist you can be working a 9-to-5 and then doing art on the side.
Oh man. Man, you have talked to some artists, huh? Because that is, that is so, so true. Like, I think about that all the time, because I feel like I was successful as an artist when it was part-time, but the opportunities that I've been able to have and the clients I've been able to work for and the things I've been able to do with my business would have never happened had I not had a 10-hour day to focus on it.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, it's just like any skill acquisition. Like, if you do something on the side for 3 hours a day, or you do it for 10 hours a day, like, the person who does it for 10 hours a day is going to do better. That's just...
Totally. Hands down. And they're going to be more focused at it. They're going to have, you know, they're going to be better just because they're allowed to have that time to focus fully on that thing, you know?
Exactly. And that time's going to compound over, you know, however many years or whatever,
mm-hmm.
to the point where, you know, the person who was only doing it for 3 hours in 10 years is going to have, you know, not even a quarter of the experience of the person who's been doing it for 10.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
What has your kind of like journey through art been like? Have you always been into like the hot rod, pinup, car culture kind of stuff? Did you start off as more of like a traditional kind of, you know, watercolors or oil painting, mm-hmm. like that?
Yes. So I have always been interested in the hot rod scene, air quotes, if you will. because I was born into a family that was very much a car person. We always go to car shows. We were always like, growing up in California, we went out to Johnson Valley a lot and was around like the off-road scene. My dad had an 89 Jeep Scrambler, and my brother and I grew up like in the back of that Jeep, and if it wasn't in that, then we were out in the garage, you know, learning how to build our own cars with my dad. And so my brother has a 71 Duster. I have a 66 Jeepster. So we're just generally old car people. And until I was, I don't even remember, I was a teenager, but we went to this car show in California called Mopars in May. And that was the first time that I had seen where art and cars could overlap. And I always knew about like Rat Fink and you know, Von Dutch, and I knew about those guys, but I never saw myself being one of those guys, because I was classically trained. So you asked if I had done like watercolors first and stuff. Well, the answer would be yes, because I had no classes in high school and even in college on like automotive enamel or like refinishing or anything like that. So that show, that car show, Mopars in May, was the first time I saw where an airbrusher was doing a demonstration on this candy orange hood of like purple flames, and he let me like play around with the airbrush and some flame stencils. And that was the first time I saw the fact that you could overlap the two. So I just like would research every now and then. This was way before social media and YouTube and all that, but I had a couple books that I still refer to in my studio today, actually, about pinstriping and different things. And during that time I was doing commission work, but it was in oil and acrylic and pen and ink and your traditional mediums, and all through college I was doing the same and making money off those types of commissions. And until I graduated college, I never even picked up a pinstriping brush.
One thing I've always wondered about, like, you use the term classically trained. One thing I've always wondered about that is, like, at what point, like, how much does the training that you receive actually help? Is art, like, something that we are inherent, like, people are either have or they don't, like, the ability to produce art, or art is born, and then, like, doesn't matter how many art classes you go to, you can never, you know, yourself to be a Picasso or a Von Dutch. You know?
Yeah, man, that's a super deep question, and I love that you just compared Picasso and Von Dutch. Like, you're my best friend for that. I think that anybody can learn a trade, but I think to really, really excel in it, you have to be born to do it. And I feel like that with singing, I feel like that with art, I feel like that with any industry, and that's just my own personal belief. But that doesn't mean to say, like, somebody that isn't born to be an artist, if you will, is not going to be really great at being a full-time custom artist. We're just going to have different aesthetics. But I think that my training in, well, I know that my training in art school, and I don't mean to sound like a snob at all when I say this, but really I learned a lot in art school as far as not just in the arts part of it, as far as like drawing and color theory and like what colors go together and how to build a composition, as far as like what looks good when you draw something and you want to have good balance in the drawing or whatever. All those like technicalities I did learn in art school, and I think that they transferred with me through everything that I do now as a custom artist in the automotive world. But also in college I learned, or in art school, I learned a lot of like stick-to-itness, because we had so many different projects. I mean, I paid for college on my own, so I was going to school. I just learned how to live life in college. I like learned how to like be scrappy and save money, and I learned how to talk about my art, which is a huge thing. I feel like that separates somebody. I always think this to myself when I paint rat fink, like, everybody in my industry can paint rat fink, but like, how do you talk about it? Like, how do you talk about your work? Like, can you say like the color fades? Like, if you put it on a canvas, like, what does the composition look like? Like, it doesn't matter if you painted rat fink or a Picasso portrait. Like, if you can talk about it in a sense of like sounding like what you know what the heck you're doing, somebody is going to see that value in that and be like, hey, I want one of those, you know? So I think talking about your art is learned a lot through like college critique, or my high school art teacher taught a lot about like talking about your artwork, and she compared it a lot to learning how to play guitar. She was like, if you can play a guitar, that's fantastic, but what happens if someone asks you to sing while you play the guitar and you haven't ever done that before? Like, if you can't sing and play the guitar at the same time, like, are you really a musician? And that always just stuck with me. It's an interesting thought. But yeah, I think all those things I learned in college, and I definitely take those with me throughout every day of my career. And side note, I don't think that you have to go to college to do this, what I'm doing. I just think that I have those little side notes of like, oh, I remember doing that in college, and this is how I can solve this problem because I took this class and I learned this little tidbit, you know?
there's a painting I wanted to ask you about. It's one of your favorite pieces that are for me that you've done. And that's Ansel Adams' Better Half.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'm so cool that you know that.
So basically, it is a picture of, I don't know if it's you.
It's actually one of my best friends. She's like has that in her house. to this day, but she modeled for me for that.
So it's a picture of your best friend on top of your car, right?
Yeah.
Taking a that picture was... of, I'm sure it's a famous mountain, I just don't recognize it.
Yeah, so a lot of my inspiration, like we spoke earlier, comes from photographs. So a lot of my like idols that I like love their work and have coffee table books of are like photographers from like eras past. And that particular painting is based off of a photograph that Ansel Adams took of Yosemite and Half Dome. And he actually photographed a lot of Yosemite to like basically document what it looked like, because there wasn't a lot of publicity about what Yosemite actually was. And so this particular photograph is him he took a timed picture, I believe, and I could be wrong, it could have been one of his friends that took this, but it's a picture of him standing on this really cool car, a Woody, and he's taking a picture of Half Dome with this pedestal. And you'll have to look it up after we're done talking, because it is just an absolutely stunning picture, and just the quality of it's amazing, but just the image is cool. So I always love that picture, and I can't remember what the rules were for this particular project in college, but I vividly remember painting that painting on my dining room table in a flat of six other girls that I was living with at the time. And I had it all, it's a huge painting. It's like 5 foot by 4 foot in real life. It's massive. And I had taken these pictures out by the lake with one of my friends, like you had said, of my Jeepster, and I just transferred that onto this canvas, and I was painting this painting in my dining room of our dorm at the time. And I remember one of my roommates spilled spaghetti on that painting. And oh my gosh, it like stressed me out so bad, because it was like for a semifinal for something or other. And I remember cleaning that off, and to this day, like, I can still see like the shadow of spaghetti grease on the top corner of that painting, because that's one of the paintings I did keep. I do sell prints of it online, but that's the painting that we have in our living room right now.
It's a beautiful, it's an absolutely beautiful picture.
Thank you.
I love it. And it's like, I don't know, I'll have to look up the other photo, but.
Yeah, you definitely should.
Your friend's sitting in the car, it's like, I don't know, it's just cool how you're kind of taking like, you're taking the perspective of away from Half Moon or Half Dome, and she's actually like the subject while she's creating this. I don't know. It's just a very cool picture. I didn't realize that it was based off. I was wondering why it had Ansel Adams' name in there, but.
Yeah, definitely. You should definitely look up that photo when you have the chance. But thank you. I appreciate it. It was a blast to paint. I definitely want to paint some more like monochromatic style paintings like that in the future, because a lot of people do find that is one of their favorites that I've done. And it's so crazy to me to think about that, because I did that, like I said. You know, I had no studio, no business name. I was just like this college kid painting what I wanted to paint, and that's what came out. So,
well, that's probably when people do their best work, is when they're just doing what they want to do.
Yeah.
Because actually, now that I think about it, both of my two favorite paintings by you, this and then the Dime Store Cowgirl, are both ones that you just did for yourself.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that so crazy? Yeah. And then, like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. I love it. And that's one of my biggest goals for 2021. And in conjunction with obviously client work, is making more time for my own work, so that I do have like a breadth of work I can take to a show or a gallery or whatever the case is, and be like, this is what I paint. And then, you know, clients can see that and be like, oh, I want something similar to that. And I'm really lucky that those two things have kind of aligned in my later years of business. I say that later years of business, but like the last couple years, most of my client work has been very closely aligned with what I enjoy painting anyway. So it's just been such an awesome thing to have that experience.
You talk about like working with a printer for Ansel Adams' Better Half. You talk about finding a printer and the type of like I'm actually just going to read the thing. You have a text-based printer looking for a high quality person. I'm just curious, like, what is the difference between like printers and paper, and like what do you look for when you are looking for someone to print your work?
Oh, man, that is an ongoing endeavor. And if anybody that's listening to this has a good printer, like, holler at me, because I have – it is they're in the art world, if you will. It's like this unspoken thing. Like, if somebody has a printer that they use to make prints of their work, like, it is freaking impossible to know who it is or whatever it is. And so I have this printer in Austin that I've been pretty happy with, who all of my prints are through right now. And so what I do is, like, I'll take a photograph of the work, send it to them, and then they ship me, like, a set number of prints that I'm able to sell through my online shop. And in the future, I would really like to offer, like, a lot higher quality. And I mean, I don't want to, like, bore people with all the different types of prints, but basically,
no, you're not boring me. I'm the only person really gonna listen. So
the prints that I sell now are, like, a little bit higher grade than, like, your average poster print, like what you would buy a poster at Walmart or whatever. So mine are a little bit higher grade than that. And then the next step from that would be, like, what's called a G-Clay print, and it's a little bit heavier duty paper. And the difference in that is that the ink is what they call archival, which means that the ink won't fade over time, and you'll have a little bit truer quality to the colors of the original painting, and all these little different things that actually, like, make the price of those prints a lot higher than what a normal print, like what I offer or what the poster type paper is. And then and then after that, you can do, like, canvas prints, which I know a lot of my friends actually upgrade their canvas prints by painting on top of those. And those are called edited canvas prints. And that just basically, like, that gives you the feeling of a true painting, because you can see, like, the brush marks and stuff. And those are normally even a little bit more. Those are the next tier as far as price goes for those types of prints. So I don't offer any of those things yet, because my market is more like Etsy sales and car shows and people that want to hang art in their office. And that's really important to me, is to continue offering art at a price that people can, like, buy and hang up in their house, like they would go to Hobby Lobby and buy, you know. And I don't want to compare my prices with Hobby Lobby, because I that's not who I am, but it is really important to me to have a like breadth of work and product out there that's, like, you know, ready to hand out to people that aren't freaking art collectors. They just want to have this cool flying eye poster in their garage, you know.
Yeah, I think, well, in the car world is one of the few kind of places, I think, where the people who are into cars they come from the poorest of the poor, and they get the richest of the rich, you know?
Oh my gosh, yes, totally.
And the car world kind of, like, if you go to a car show, you can see, you know, a $2,000 beater next to a, you know, $100,000 car. It's not unusual. And those two guys hanging out and talking.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Isn't that so cool? It's like the ultimate leveler.
Yeah, no, it really is. I play chess, and that's one of the other places I've seen that, where, like, chess, it doesn't matter, like, how rich or poor you are. Like, you'll see, you know, even it's like one of the few sports where, like, you can play against your heroes, you know. It's kind of,
oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
It's a cool kind of atmosphere, because it, even though it's like a competition, or like in cars where it's like, yeah, you guys are both, like, one of you probably going to go home to, like, you know, $1 million slum, and, or, I mean, $1 million house.
You're right, right.
Sleep in your car, you know, and, like, but, like, on that day, you guys are equal, and you guys are hanging out, and you guys can be friends. I think that's really cool.
That is super cool. I love that. I've never thought of it like that, and it's so, so true.
But I guess that could, might, maybe, it may run into problems for, as an artist, where, as you continue to get better and better, you may, and you actually see this in all kinds of art, where the people who love it originally get priced out of it.
Oh, yeah. I think that happens with anybody that, you know, works their way up. I think that happens. But I don't know. I really do, like, no matter what my career brings in the future, like, it's really important to me to have some sort of something where I can just go to a car show and put out prints for, you know, $30-$40. Like, that's really cool to me. And it's special to me too, because that's really how I've built my business, is for those people that have supported me in that way. And I'm so grateful for them. Like, they're buying a print, you know, for $30, and it may be nothing to them, but to me, it's like, you know, part of my electricity bill or part of my cell phone bill or part of the show vendor fee or whatever the case is. Like, they're helping me live my dream and do this full time. And I'm so grateful for them. And I feel like that every time somebody buys something on Etsy, I'm like, oh man, that's awesome. You know?
What you just said reminded me of Banksy when he went, did you hear about Banksy when he went to the New York, he went to Times Square and he was selling prints of his work.
Yes.
And nobody knew it was him, and only one person, or I think three people, bought them for $25, and they were $10,000 prints.
Oh my gosh, I freaking love that. I think that is like the essence of our culture.
Did you see when he donated a picture of,
and it got shredded or something?
Yeah, it got shredded.
Yes,
after
I
the guy
saw
spent $1 million on it.
Yes, but that was like part of he. He's crazy. I don't understand. I don't think anybody will ever fully understand him, but that's what makes his art so cool. You know, it makes it so intriguing.
Well, I think that's unbelievable. It's just so, I think that's rad. Like, if you, I don't know,
yeah.
If you know, it gets like shredded halfway, but.
Oh yeah. Like the ultimate badass. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then like he took this piece of art that was already like an incredible piece of art worth $1 million. And then he turned it into one that's probably worth more now.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? And the guys that were a part of that all became, like, super famous for that time, too. Awesome.
That's the level you want to get to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I have definitely some big-hitting people that I follow on Instagram that I'm like, one day, that's hopefully going to be us.
Did you see the – not to keep talking about Banksy, but did you see
oh, no,
the,
you're fine.
Who got scolded on –
what? No.
So Banksy has all of his works in public, and if you end up with an original Banksy, you can send him a, like, letter that just basically says, like, or you can ask him for a certificate of authenticity. And he'll only hand them out to people who, like, haven't stolen his work from the street, I guess.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Gosh, that's cool.
Stole one of his works up from a wall. It was like a stone wall in England.
Oh yeah.
Brought it on Antiques Roadshow, and the guy like scolded him and was like, "You need to bring this back."
Oh my gosh, that's awesome that you recognized that. It's so cool.
It was pretty rad.
Wow, that's awesome.
But getting back to you, who's more important, anyways?
Oh, well, you're too kind.
I noticed that you do. You do a lot of things that aren't car related also.
Yeah.
For instance, you did recently like a high school murals, and you paint like signs, you paint car, or well, that's car related, but like you do pinstriping, but you also do like earrings and all kinds of like little things. Does that all kind of mix together? Like, is that the kind of stuff you want to do, or are those just things that are like commissions that you get asked to do, or how does that work kind of working outside your main body?
Yeah. So, excuse me, with the earrings and ornaments and the purses and things like that, those are all things that I've seen at shows that sell well, because I am catering to certain people when I do those things, and they still use the same paint that I use when I pinstripe. So it kind of is very similar as far as those things go. Like the guys are buying them for their wives because the pinstriping on the earrings match their car, or they order a custom ornament because they want me to put their dog's face on it, and I use the same paint, and they hired me for pinstriping a couple years ago, or whatever the case is. So all of that goes kind of in the same breath. But as far as like the mural work that I've done, and like the children's books and things like that I've done, they aren't related, obviously, to the car scene, but those are the clients that I've built from before I got into this industry, and kind of the people that still follow me for that. And that's something that I'm still very passionate about. And I've actually had like a hard time like really figuring out if I'm going to still offer both of those things, like book illustrations for children's books and pinstriping. Like, yeah, it doesn't go together, but am I making a living off of both things? Like, yes, I am. And do I enjoy both things? Like, I absolutely enjoy both things, and I absolutely enjoy both clients, both types of clients. So I do have a lot of people that tell me I should just narrow in on like the automotive industry, but for me, it's important to include the book illustrations and the mural work and the different things outside of my field, because for one, I learn a lot from those things and that I can use in my automotive industry type artwork. And then two, I fully still enjoy those types of people and those types of projects. So I don't know why I would ever say like, nope, I'm not doing children's books anymore, or nope, I'm not doing any mural work anymore. Like,
I don't think you should cut those out at all.
Yeah, I appreciate you for saying that. It's, you know, a lot of like, especially like market. It's interesting to me that you said you were going into like a business of your own with doing marketing or whatever, but because I do a lot of like podcasts, I listen to a lot of podcasts based off marketing and like Instagram things, and a lot of them are like, oh, your feed should look very similar and you should have like a very clear goal as to what you're, and I think like my feed is not that similar and my goal is kind of like widespread, but as far as my client base and what I like to paint, what I like to say is my clients are who tie everything in all my work is tied together by my clients, and we're all connected in some way, and every one of them has put their trust in me to paint something for them, and to me that is like top 10 gold for me. Like I'm so grateful for those people that have trusted me to do the work for them, and they're the ones who tie my portfolio together, like all their stories and their personalities and the friendships we've built and the business relationships we've built, like that's all part of it. And so that's what ties my portfolio together. At least that's what I like to think.
I think, like you said, we see this a lot in like the marketing world and stuff. And I think that the people who say that you should try to keep everything similar, you should try to never kind of show off who you are, I think that's the wrong thing to do. Social media is all about being yourself and connecting with people who are like you. Pretending you're someone else or pretending like this other thing isn't a big part of your life, I think is not only silly but detrimental to your business.
Thinking of a story right now that just popped into my head when you asked me that question, and to kind of show like when I say like my clients are what bring me together, like I was at I think it was either last year or this year, I was at the Dallas Autorama, which is one of my favorite shows in the world because I get to paint with a bunch of artists from all around, and all of our work goes up for auction, and then the money goes towards the Scottish Rite Children's Hospital. And it's just an amazing event that I just find a lot of inspiration at, and it's completely automotive related. Like, we are only pinstriping and doing pinstripe illustration and things like that. And the most recent book that I illustrated, called Rock Me Right, the author of that book like knows nothing about cars, nothing. And we had only contacted each other through phone and FaceTime and email. And when she found out I was going to be at that car show, she showed up there and like came to see this other side of me. And it was so cool because she had no clue about the car scene or like this huge crazy car show. I mean, it's the Autorama in Dallas. It's a huge show. And so it was really cool to like see that whole circle come to fruition, you know. It was just really a cool thing. And I feel like that's kind of what ties, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's people that I've met, you know, just through my Instagram or whatever that have become like my friends.
Yeah.
And, like, there's nothing – I don't feel like going outside of – you know, and I do – I go outside of, like, doing trucks, like, whatever. I'll post, like, themes or I'll do – I'll have podcasts with people who, you know, have – I just did one with my buddy Paul who – Vice Jewelers, who – he makes custom jewelry. Like, I just like
him.
Oh,
yeah, I listen to that. It's so cool.
I just think he's a cool dude, and I wanted to talk to him. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, your business is like people oriented, and I feel like that's how I am too. I mean, if there has been jobs where people come to me and say like, this is what I want, and I'm like, hey, you know, I don't think that's going to fit my aesthetic. I don't know if I'm going to be able to like successfully deliver the artwork that you would want or need based off that idea. And so all of this networking I've done, all these friends I've made in the industry, guess what? I'm going to give them three other people that may could help them out. And that's really important to me. And it's totally a people-based business. Like, just like what you're doing with the podcast and even with what you do with Collision and in your trucks and everything like that is completely people-based.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, there wouldn't be any industry without people.
Yeah,
so, like, definitely. Connecting with those people. And the other kind of example I have is I say this all the time. Like, I'm not – like, when people talk to me about engines, like,
yeah.
That's not really my thing. Like, I don't really – I'm just really not that interested in learning about engines. Like, I think they're cool. Like, I like that my car drives, you know what I mean? But,
yeah,
like, when people – I always say, like, when people meet and they talk about cars, like, it's like they have this conversation where, like, they say the number of the engine, and then, like,
yeah.
We both agree that that's a good number.
Yeah.
And then, like, we move on from the engine conversation. Like, you know, I had someone tell me, like, you shouldn't admit to that, like, you should just – and I'm like, well, if anyone ever asks me, they're going to know very quickly. Like, I don't really
yeah.
care. Like, I'll talk to you all day about, like, you know, fender flares or, you know, the shape of a market light or whatever, like, the
right.
color choices, you know, for an interior. But when it just comes to the engines, that's just not my thing. And I don't feel like lying about that is going to make me seem better or – anything like that. And I think ultimately it's just going to hurt because, you know, at the end of the day, I still don't know or really care about engines that much.
Oh, absolutely. I think that plays a lot into what it did take me a while to like get into the automotive industry and be confident. And a lot of that reasoning behind that, it wasn't because I was not a confident person. I do have a lot of self-confidence just from the way I was raised. And I'm just really blessed with a really great family. But I waited a long time to like say like, yeah, I'm a pinstriper because it was really important to me to start at the bottom and work up. And it goes along the lines of what you were saying. Like, I wasn't ever going to say like, especially when I bought my Jeepster, that's another great example. Like, I was this chick in this field that knew nothing about this kind of male dominated field. And I didn't want to say like, yeah, I have a Jeepster and I did this, this, and this. Like, it's really important to me. It was especially at the time as well to let people know, like, I did it, but I couldn't have done it without the help of this person. And that was my dad or my brother or whoever was there to help me at the time learn how to do that. And I think it's important to work your way into that title. And I feel that it was really important for me and my business to do the same thing. And I think the Jeepster concept is what really helped me learn that. You got to start somewhere. And if you don't admit that you're like, hey, I don't really know a lot about engines right now, or like in my you and me talking, like, I would be like, I have no idea what you're talking about when it comes to like what you were just saying about bodywork and stuff. But I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, you know, because then what if there's a time where like we work together and you're like, oh yeah, this is what I want, and you just assume that I know this, you know?
Yeah, now you have to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and exactly. Then, like, oh,
frantically Googling.
Yes. Oh my gosh, totally. And that's not to say that there hasn't been times where I've been like, yeah, I can do that. And then like back in the corner of my studio, like, oh shit, how do I do this? You know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for business is one thing. And if like you think you can do something, you just may not know the exact steps, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like just lying about, you know, the
like
fact
straight,
that I love engines,
yeah.
Like one, it just doesn't really matter. I don't think it's
right.
Too, you know, I mean, if that's the reason you're going to choose not to like me, you're probably not going to like me anyways. So.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It's just important to be real all around for sure.
So I want to talk a little bit about your newest series that you have coming out.
Okay.
Called, She's Been Everywhere, Man.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that and what brought you here?
Yeah, for sure. So I, like I said earlier, I'm super inspired by song lyrics and music in general. So everybody knows Johnny Cash, and I was just listening in passing to the song I think everybody and their mom has heard many times, called I've Been Everywhere, Man. I don't think it was initially written by Johnny Cash, but he was definitely the one to make that song famous. And I had been thinking, like, I want to get a series put out because since my college career, I hadn't really had, like, this group of paintings that had the same theme that I could take to a gallery and be like, hey, I want to do this show. I did that in college with a different group of paintings that have all since sold. But in my professional career, it's important to me to do that, not just once, but hopefully a few times. And so that song came on, and I was like, man, this could be a really cool concept for a painting series, and you could do paintings based off these like one-liners of like where he's like, I've, you know, crossed the deserts bare man, and that could be a portion of California, or not California, but Monument Valley, for example, where I've been to Monument Valley. So a little bit of my background is that I grew up with a great family, and we did a lot of road trips for vacations. Like, we were never the kind of family to like fly somewhere. We always drove. And that was important to me because that's where a lot of my family memories were made. And so with that concept in my mind and knowing like, okay, people love that I paint pinup girls. I really enjoy painting cars and pinups together. So how can I combine those two concepts with the kind of person and personality I am, and the kind of thing I know my crowd would like? And so that's how I kind of birthed She's Been Everywhere Man, which is a series that has a pinup girl and a different car in every painting, and the backgrounds are all going to be like iconic images of America. And so my first one was Hollywood, and then I'm working on Monument Valley and Joshua Tree and the Pacific Coast Highway. So those are three other paintings, or four other paintings, I'm working on as well. And then I have a few more coming down the line that are going to be like Route 66, Grand Canyon. I'm hoping to do like the Texas Stockyards. And each one of these will have like a different hot rod and a pinup girl in the painting. And so I'm really excited. And the biggest thing is that they're all going to be done in automotive enamel on canvas. And I'm excited about that because I think it's going to help bridge the gap of like lowbrow artwork and like high-end gallery style artwork. And I'm really hoping that this maybe bridges the gap. If I can get into a gallery, that's like my ultimate goal.
Well, looking at at least the first one, the first completed Hollywood, I don't think you'll have any problem. Any issues with painting with enamel on canvas? Because enamel is generally much thicker, I would think, than paint made for canvas.
Yeah, it definitely has its own little like tricks and stuff. I'm sure you know a little bit about the paint, obviously, but the canvas has a gesso on it, which is like a white paint. Every canvas you see in like Hobby Lobby or whatever art store you're in has a white surface to it, and that's a gesso style paint. And gesso in its nature can be really dry and like porous. And so I found with the first couple paintings that if I do an underpainting of acrylics and then start building the enamel on top of that, it's a lot easier for me to get these bright, vibrant colors and outlines. And so every painting has a full blown acrylic painting underneath it that, I know it sounds like a lot of work, and it is. There's so many layers in these paintings. It's awesome, but it gives all the depth, and it's just a process of joy. I know it sounds like, you know, tiresome to some other people that, you know, but it's my passion. I love it.
So, how long did it take you to do the Hollywood painting?
The Hollywood painting, from drawing to completion and doing it every day for about 10 hours. And that includes weekends, about 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot of time. And all of the drawings were actually born a long time ago, like about a year or two ago. And they were just sketches that I've built from different photographs. And the biggest thing about this series is that the majority of the pinup and cars will be taken from photographs from like iconic pinup girls of our time, or professional photographers that you see like just scrolling through Instagram. So the Hollywood one was actually based off of a photograph by Trent Shrill with Speed and Culture magazine, and he's been super on board with this entire series. So a lot of his photographs will be used as inspiration and reference for the upcoming paintings.
We talked a little bit about the creative decisions that you have to make as an artist when you're transferring something from like a photograph to like a painting. How does that process work in your mind? Is it like just a lot of drawing and redrawing, or do you just kind of picture it before and then just kind of go for it?
Yeah, so I actually call it, and I use this term with my clients, it's probably not very professional, but I call it redneck Photoshop. but basically, I don't work on the computer at all. Like, I avoid it like the plague if I can. And so everything that you see in a completed painting, like with Dime Store Cowgirl or the Hollywood painting, like what we're talking about, has multiple images that I combine in one sketch. And so with Hollywood, for example, the background, I did a lot of like historical research on the streets of Hollywood, like in the 40s and 50s. And I would print those pictures out. And then I had the initial Cadillac and pinup girl picture. And then I would cut them out and like kind of arrange them in a way that made sense to me to draw from. And some of the drawing does have to be from my imagination, just as far as like, okay, if the camera angle was at this point and the sun was here, how would this look? And that goes back to learning how to draw. And that was taught to me. Obviously, I had an intuition and a talent for it before I went to art school, but it was definitely honed in at art school and like different, you know, angles and aspects and light and all of those things are brought together and sketched out first before the painting is actually done. And so I'll have a full-blown colored reference sketch that I've done in pencil and colored pencil that will then be transferred to the gesso covered canvas. And then after that is when I do the acrylic painting and then the enamel painting on top of that.
When you're working on a painting, when does there come a point where, like, how do you know when it's actually done? You know, because like I know for writers, a lot of times they talk about how like they could just keep rewriting it and rewriting it forever, and like eventually they just have to call it. You know, how do you know when something is like done like this? And is like, do you say like this is the best that I can do right now, or is it like this is what I saw in my head and this is what I wanted?
Okay, yeah. So I think that is the question of every, like of all ages with every artist, like every era, like how do you know when it's done? And I have no idea how to answer that because every piece has a different, I have no idea. I don't know how to answer that. It's like an intuition. Like so with the painting I'm working on now that has Chevy and it has like Monument Valley in the background, like there just comes a time where literally you're like, okay, this is going to be my last line. And you can feel it. I don't know how to explain it. And I think it comes with the whole intuition and knowing like this for me, like a lot of the work comes to my head before I get it out on paper or canvas. And that's when I know it's going to be a really strong piece. And same with my client work. Like if I can envision it before we even start putting pencil to paper, like I have a pretty good feeling of like, it's going to be a piece. And if I don't get that, there's going to be a lot of like creative problem solving through that piece and maybe not so much a very happy outcome on my end. But I've never had a client that, thank God, has been like, that's not at all what I was hoping. Like there's so much behind the scenes work that we do, my clients and I do together before we get to a final piece, that it's so rare to have somebody that's unhappy with the final work because the whole time they've been included in like every little aspect. And so with client work, it may be a little bit different than what I do, you know, on my free time with my series or Dime Store Cowgirl, but really it's just an intuition. And there is that moment where you're like, I don't want to touch this anymore. This is exactly what I pictured. This is working in every aspect. As far as technical stuff goes, I always take a picture of my work and put it in black and white before I call it done. And that helps me see if there's enough contrast. Of course, I don't do that with like just straight line drawing or whatever, but with paintings and like especially black and white portraits and stuff like that, I put them in black and white on my phone and I just make sure that I have a really wide range of contrast from really blacks all the way to really white and then everything in between. And if I don't, then I go back and evaluate in color in person with my painting and say, okay, what's gonna make this painting have more contrast? And that's just my own style because I like having paintings that have good depth and really high contrast and really good shadows and lights and darks and things like that.
What is that? I don't understand. So you put it in black and white and then you're just looking for like balance between kind of like the different like spectrum.
Yeah. So I encourage you to like try it on your own. Like take a picture of a car in color, and then try and find, like, say you take a picture of a red car, and in your, in just plain sight, you may only see like three different shades of red. But when you put it in black and white, you can see those three shades, dark, medium, and light, but you may also see all of the other shades in between those shades. And that's what creates a really 3D looking painting. And so with my color work, if I put it in black and white and only see like dark black, dark gray, and maybe like a lighter gray, and I don't see like a really bright white in there somewhere, it usually means that it's not done because I didn't add like enough highlights, or I didn't put enough bright colors into it to make it pop. And those really dark and really light colors is what makes my work, my style, pop.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so that's the technical side of it.
Like after spending all that time, like I'm thinking about like when you spend a lot of time on something and you're just like, all right, this is done. But then to go back, like have to take it, put it into black and white, and then to be like, no, it's not. Like I wouldn't go through that.
Killer. Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. Like I say, like this, like, you know, oh, this is my passion. I'm like so like poetic about it. But there are some times where I'm like, this is crap, and I am so done with this painting, and it just goes into the closet or whatever, sits on the ground for a couple weeks until I'm ready to work on it again. But with client work, it's like that meme, you know, where it's like that meme where it says like, it's like the little stick figure working on the engine of a car, and it says like, you know, F this shit, and it's like throwing his hands up in the air. And then like the next frame of the meme is like, oh, never mind, I have to get back to work tomorrow in this car. That's kind of how client work is, you know, like that's kind of the bane of an artist's existence that works for like clients, because like, yeah, you may not be feeling creative, or like, for instance, like I was saying earlier on our chat, you know, your life may be literally like falling down around you, but this client has no concept or clue of that, and they're expecting this work to be done at this time on this day and look like this. So like, yeah, you're hating your life, and you don't want to put it in black and white and do all these fine detail, finesses of the final work, but you got to, you know, you just got to pull through and do it. And that's what it takes grit, man. It takes a lot of grit. It's not just like, ooh, I feel creative today, let's paint, you know?
I have one more question for you, and it's a doozy. Are you ready?
Okay, shoot.
All right. If you could do one painting for one person, anyone alive or dead, and you could do anything you want and give them this painting, who would it be, and what would you do?
Oh, man. Man, okay. I have a couple, if you don't mind. But
no, absolutely. Take as much time.
Okay, the first one that I thought would be super cool would be either would be Jay Leno. I think that would be a really cool guy to do a painting for. As far as what, I don't know. I think it'd be fun to do, like, a picture of his car in, like, a setting that he likes, like a place that he went to that is, you know, close to his heart or whatever. But I know he's, like, a big car guy, and he always just, like, looks and seems really, really nice. So I'm like, he would be a cool dude to, like, work for. and then there's a couple others. I've always wanted to have my artwork on a wine or whiskey label. I pick my wine and whiskey based off like how cool the label looks. And I know it's awful. It's like judging a book by its cover, but that's a big goal of mine. And then lastly, one of the things I would love to have my artwork on is like an album cover of some kind. Any artwork really, like, obviously, Texas country speaks to my heart because I live in Texas, and that's, I go and watch a lot of Texas country. But like, man, we could spend hours talking about different musicians and stuff that I would love to have my artwork on the cover of their album for, T-shirts or whatever the case is.
Who?
I'm gonna name
a couple. Who knows? Well, if you put it out into the universe, it might come back.
Oh, I know. Well, like the snake painting I'm working on, I always thought like, man, this would be such a cool cover for Zane Williams, his album or whatever. And then like, as silly as it sounds, like I always thought the Cars had such cool, like, and this is like, you know, you said alive or dead. So I always like admired the Cars album cover. And my dad's like a big 80s hair metal band. So I know like a lot of like Judas Priest and Def Leppard, and then you know who else has really cool album artwork that's really dark and like totally not my style, but it's so cool, is Five Finger Death Punch has some really cool album artwork, and Volbeat has some really cool album artwork that I think really plays into my aesthetic as far as like pinstriping and hot rod, and they're, I think they're Swedish or something, Volbeat, I don't know, they're not from America, but they have some really cool artwork and great music, so.
That's awesome. I feel like album art, it doesn't, it's like, it's one of those things that like we don't get to appreciate anymore.
Oh
you
my
know,
gosh,
like,
totally. And like the lyric, you know, like the little lyric things that came in CDs and cassettes
yeah.
and stuff, like we don't get that anymore. It sucks. I hate it.
I was
it.
Just going to say, because I remember my first tape was Evil Empire by Rage Against the Machine.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like, it was just a cassette tape. It came with like a little insert, you know, and then like eventually you went to CDs and like you got to like check out the album art. I don't even remember the last time I saw an album art, like not in person.
I know, seriously. And you know what? I saw a statistic the other day that said, like, vinyl records were outselling CDs for, like, the first time since vinyl came out. And I was like, that is cool. Oh, my gosh. Something that the millennial culture got right. You know, like, I was like, that is so cool.
It's actually, so. Vinyl is so popular that there's actually, like, this huge, because you, to record a vinyl album, you have to, like, actually record it. So, like, you have to play every. To record an album on vinyl, you have to, like, play it, I think. No, that's not right. You press it. You
oh,
have to,
I
like,
have,
press them.
Yeah.
But there's only, like, a couple places in the country that do it, I guess.
Oh, yes, I did hear that. I totally heard that.
And, like, they have to press every one, and everything has to go, like, real perfectly right. So, like, it's becoming – there's, like, a huge bottleneck of, like, vinyls.
Oh,
right?
That is so
it's
cool.
It's crazy. Like,
I think – man, I love that. I think it – I don't know. And I think that really does highlight the musician and the artist and the lyricist and all the people that go into making music. And these days there's so many, you know, I think an album really highlights all those things really well visually anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where I feel like we, you know, like when you get an album, like you can really see like Meatloaf's Bad Out of Hell album.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I can't
you know what I mean? Like the album itself, like just like, you couldn't walk by that without stopping to look at it, you know?
Oh, totally. And, like, for instance, that the Kacey Musgraves album I just got, my husband got me her Christmas album a couple years ago. It's pink. Like, the actual vinyl itself is pink, hot pink. It is so cool, and it's see-through. And so it's just, like, really striking. Like, if you saw that in the store, you're like, I can't not look at that, you know, even if I don't know this artist.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, and like metal bands are really, they always have really cool fantasy, like I really like this band called Manowar, and they're like, I don't know where they're
from. Oh, yeah.
They have like, what was that?
My brother has told me about them. I don't know a lot about their music, but my brother is big into that kind of stuff too, so.
Yeah, and they have like, you know, all these like awesome fantasy, like album covers where they're like all jacked and like fighting a dragon or something, you know, like just crazy
oh, yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, it's very, like, very similar.
When that's the size of like an actual album, it's like, you can't, there's no way that like some 12-year-old is going to be able to walk by that without stopping to pick it up.
Oh, totally. And like my brother has the Cars, one of the Cars albums has like a pinup chick. It's an I think it's an Elvgren pinup chick and a 71 or 70 Duster on it with like a guitar. And it's, and he has that framed, just the freaking album art framed in his house. And it's like, it used to be this huge thing to be an artist and be featured on an album, you know? And let me like be real, like it was a huge thing to be like a fine artist, like somebody that painted. And a lot of the stuff you see these days, no dirt on graphic artists, but like a lot of the stuff we see these days is graphic art. And it would be so cool to like start seeing a little bit more of like the hand-drawn stuff come back into like the light, because there's so many people out there that draw by hand and paint things with their hands, and they don't use computers. And for me, I don't have any really computer skills. I actually outsource all of my digital work to one of my really great friends who knows how to work with my paintings, and she turns them into like digital artwork for me. But it would be so cool, and I think the music industry could really utilize like fine artists, people that paint and draw and do things by hand, and start using that again. I think that would be so cool.
And actually, since we're complaining about people not using art anymore, I read a lot, and books used to have awesome covers.
Yeah.
And now they suck. Now it's always like some like, it's like a stupid picture with like a couple of faces like front like kind of like
yeah.
On
or
it.
Like
it's just,
yes, or
always looks so stupid. Totally. Like I was looking at like one of my favorite artists is Frank Frazetta. He did all like the Conan art.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And like I was looking at his pictures the other day, and it's like these are like this is legitimate art, and they used to just print it on the front of like dime store novels. You know what I mean? That you just like throw out.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. I never thought of it like that because there's a bookstore here in town I go to. It's a used bookstore, and they have like antique books, and of course they have like a novel section, and like. If you think about it, even, like, all those really crappy, like, 89-cent dime store novels, like, the real trashy ones, those all have great artwork on the front of them, like, hand-drawn portraits and, like, I never even thought of it like that. But that just goes to show you that art is truly everywhere, like, and it's amazing. Like, it's just amazing to think of all the different fields that you can go into as an artist.
I actually had this conversation with someone at my work not that long ago. Everything that exists, unless it is found in nature, was designed by a human to be aesthetically pleasing. Like,
yeah.
That goes down to everything. I mean, like, you know, like, if you look at, like, the old clunky plastic computers, like, someone had to choose the color that those computers would be, and they had a reason for choosing that color.
Oh, absolutely. And I think
you know,
that goes back to, like, everybody is creative.
For sure. Like, everything in our world has, like, has aesthetic and, like, color choices that are made for a reason because the person, basically
yeah.
because, you know, people like that. Or, I mean, there's, like, some color theory, like, I think orange is the most visible color, so, like, that's, like, for safety or...
Right. Well, it's not to say that there isn't some science in it, but I do think that, like, the person that created the computer, to use your example, like, they were creative in their own right. Like, yeah, they couldn't paint my portrait on a canvas, but they, like, created this computer, something I could never do. And is it aesthetically pleasing? Yes, at the time, those big, clunky 80s computers were, because that was, like, the first thing that anyone ever had seen like that.
Right. Well, if you remember, like, some of them were beige and some of them were gray. Like, there were reasons that they chose those colors.
Totally. Yeah, it was like, I think it was probably like to like blend in, you know, to the office setting when really it was like, does that really blend into anything? No, it's like the size of a Volkswagen.
Well, Kate, that is my last question for you. Thank you so much for coming on. You did fantastic.
Oh, it was such a pleasure. Gosh, I feel like we're like great friends now. If you ever come to Texas, like hit us up because we take you out to good barbecue and dancing or something.
Oh, hell yeah. If you ever find yourself in New Hampshire, make sure you let me know. We'll definitely do something.
Oh, I would absolutely love that. I just thank you so much for taking the time to like hear me out and listen to me nerd out about art and how excited I am about this business. It really helps fuel my fire and keeps me going and keeps my head down. I really appreciate it.
Believe me, the pleasure was all mine. I absolutely loved it.
Cool. Thanks, man.
No problem. I hope you have a wonderful night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Guys, thank you so much for listening today. I really appreciate it. And thank you to Kate for coming on. Do me a favor. Go check out her Instagram, @AsphaltCanvasCustoms. And if you really want to love me, do me a favor and leave me a 5-star review on my Apple Podcast thing. So that way this podcast can reach more people. And if you really, really love me, then do me a favor and share this episode with someone. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day.